There is a sentence among us, as we are, so we are. It would be thought lacking to despise one for being what he was born to be. The atoms of flesh? Dietrich had started to ask, when the Heinzelmonken interrupted. Seldom means more often than never? Question, exclamation. The Kratzer directed a series of rapid clicks at Hans, at the conclusion of which the latter exposed his neck and addressed once more his typewriting. When the philosopher spoke again, he returned to this curious event of the colored trees. Know you the reason for it? Question. Dietrich, uncertain what the quarrel signified and unwilling to provoke the Kratzer's anger, answered that the Herr God had arranged the color change to warn of approaching winter, while the evergreens maintained the promise of spring to come, and thus imbued into the moods of the year sorrow and hope alike. This explanation puzzled the Kratzer, who asked whether Manfred's overlord were a master forester, at which non sequitur Dietrich despaired of explanation. The church celebrated the beginning of each agricultural season to pray for a good planting, or for summer rains, or for a good harvest. The Ferrier Messes opened the wine harvest, and in consequence the Mass Exultate Deo was better attended than most. The southern slope of the Katharinaberg prickled with vineyards that produced a vintage that sold well in the Freiburg markets, and provided Oberhochwald with one of its few sources of silver. But the past year had been again a cold one, and there was concern that the press be bountiful. At the offertory, Klaus presented a bunch of ripe grapes picked from his own vines, and during the consecration Dietrich squeezed one of the grapes to mingle its juice with the wine in the chalice. Usually the congregation would chatter among themselves, even lingering in the vestibule until summoned by the preparation bell. Today they watched in rapt concentration, engaged not by memory of Christ's sacrifice, but by hope that the ritual would bring good luck in the harvest, as if the Mass were mere sorcery and not a memorial of the great sacrifice. Elevating the chalice high above his head, Dietrich saw, nested in the vises under the clerestory, the glowing yellow eyes of a crank. Frozen, he stood with arms extended until the appreciative murmur of his flock called him to himself. A superstition had been gaining favor of late that the door from purgatory to heaven flew open while the bread and wine were elevated, and worshippers sometimes complained if the priest made too brief an elevation. Surely, by such a lengthy elevation, their priest had won a great many souls free to the greater sanctification of the wine harvest. Dietrich replaced the cup on the altar, and, genuflecting, mumbled the closing words, because the sense of them had suddenly fled his mind. Joachim, who knelt beside him holding the hem of the chasuble in one hand and the bell in the other, glanced also toward the rafters, but if he saw the creature he gave no sign. When Dietrich dared once more to raise his own eyes, the unexpected visitor had withdrawn into the shadows. After Mass, Dietrich knelt before the altar with his hands clenched into a ball before him. Above, carved from a single great piece of red oak, darkened further by 100 years of smoking beeswax, Christ hung impaled upon his cross. The wasted figure, naked but for a scrap of decency, body twisted in agony, mouth gaping open in that last pitiable accusation, "Why have you abandoned me?" emerged from the very wood of the cross, so that victim and instrument grew one from the other. It had been a brutal and humiliating way to die, far kinder the faggot, noose, or headsman's axe that in modern times eased the journey. Dimly, Dietrich heard the rumble of carts, clatter of billhooks and pruning shears, braying of donkeys, indistinct voices, curses, snap of whips, groan of wheels, as the villagers and the serfs gathered and departed for the vineyards. Quiet descended by degrees, until all that was left beyond the ancient groaning of the walls was a distant, irregular clang-clang from Lawrence's smithy at the foot of the hill. When he was certain that Joachim had not lingered, Dietrich rose to his feet. "Hans," he said softly when he had donned the crankish head harness and had pressed the sigil that awoke the Heinzelmanken. "Was it you I saw in the clerestory during Mass? How came you into those heights without being seen?" A shadow moved under the roof beams, and a voice spoke in his ear. "I wear a harness that gives flight, and entered through the bell tower. The sentence was in my head to watch your ceremony."
"The Mass? Why?"
"The sentence is that you hold the key for our salvation. But the Kratzer laughs and Geschert will not listen. Both say we must find our own way back to the heavens."
"It is a heresy many have fallen prey to," admitted Dietrich, "that heaven can be reached without help."
The crank servant was silent for a moment before answering.
"I had thought your ritual would complete inside my head the picture of you."
"And has it?"
Dietrich heard a sharp clack from the rafters above him, and he craned his neck to spy where the crank had now perched himself.
"No," said the voice in his ear.
"The picture of Dietrich inside my own head," Dietrich admitted, "is also incomplete."
"This is the problem. You want to help us, but I see no gain for you."
Shadows shifted in the flickering candlelight, not quite black because the flames that cast them guttered red and yellow. Two small lights gleamed in the vices. Were they the crank's eyes catching the dancing fires, or only metal fittings securing a beam?
"Must there always be a gain for me in what I do?" Dietrich asked of the darkness,
uncomfortably aware that the gain he sought was his own continued solitude and freedom from fear.
"Beings always act to their own gain, to obtain food, or stimulate the senses, to win acceptance in one's place, to reduce the labors needed to possess these things."
"I cannot call you wrong, friend Grasshopper. All men seek the good, and certainly food and the pleasures of the flesh and the surcease from labor are goods, or else we would not seek them. But I cannot say that you are entirely right, either. What does Theresia gain from her herbs?"
"Acceptance," was the crank's swift reply. "Her place in the village."
"That won't make the cabbage fat. A man in want of food may drain a swamp or steal a furrow. In want of pleasure, he may love his wife or fick another's. The way to heaven is not found in partial goods, but only in the perfect good. To help others," he said, "is a good in itself. Our Lord's cousin James wrote, 'God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble.' And 'religion pure and undefiled is this, to give aid to orphans and widows in their desperation.'"
"Manfred's cousin carries no weight with the crank. He is not our Lord, nor is Manfred so strong as Geschert has feared. When his own folk defied him over the haycocks, he did not strike them as they deserved, but allowed his servants to decide the matter for him, the act of a weakling. And they came back his own underlings, and said that the gardeners had right. Duty binds them to gather Manfred's hay, but not to place the cocks in the carts."
Dietrich nodded. "So stands it in the Weistumer. It is the custom of the manor." The crank drummed on the rafter and leaned into the ambit of the guttering candlelight so far that Dietrich thought he would topple off.
"But that leaves next year the haycocks standing in the fields," Hans said, "while serfs wait in the curia to unload. That is thought lacking."
A small smile creased Dietrich's lips as he recalled the muddle that had ensued in the court following the findings of the inquest.
"We gain some small amusement from paradoxes. It is a form of entertainment, like singing or dancing."
"Singing?"
"Another time I will explain that."
"It is dangerous for one who rules to show weakness,"
Johann insisted. "Had your Langemann made such a demand on Herr Geschert, he would be picking food ere now."
I do not deny that Geshert is choleric in his humor, Dietrich said dryly.